Many people today are anti-Israel or anti-Jewish. One major reason is because they don't know the real history and fact about Israel and the Palestinians. We're going to look now at one false narrative that's causing a lot of debate today. To find out more, join us for Four Shadows Report. Welcome to Four Shadows Report. This is Steve Miller. It doesn't take much for us to recognize that false narratives can do a lot of damage. These narratives communicate wrong information that leads to wrong conclusions. The greatest example of this took place in the Garden of Eden. Satan communicated incorrect information to Adam and Eve, and when Adam and Eve acted on this false narrative, all of mankind fell into sin. When it comes to the nation of Israel today, we're seeing false narratives shift into high gear. There is a lot of incorrect information about Israel that is causing people to come to wrong conclusions, which is why it's so important for us as Christians to exercise discernment and to know the truth. That will be our focus in this podcast episode. Ever since the war broke out between Hamas and Israel, we've seen an explosion of anti-Semitism all over the world. This was especially true on college campuses in the United States and Europe. Large numbers of students took sides with Hamas. Even though Hamas started the war and killed more than 1,200 innocent Israelis and kidnapped another 240, many Christians were shocked by this. How could so many people support a terrorist group that has a long history of hating Israel? In a Harvard-Harris poll taken several weeks ago, more than 50% of Americans aged 18 to 24 years said they believed that Israel should be brought to an end and given to Hamas and the Palestinians. They view Israel as the bad guy, and they agree that Israel should be wiped out. 24% of them denied that Hamas carried out sexual crimes against Jewish women, even though there is an abundance of evidence, some of it on video. We look at these poll results and we wonder, how is this possible? How can people be so blind to obvious facts? There was another study done at University of California, Berkeley. The study asked students for their perspectives on Israel, the Palestinians, and the Middle East. The results showed the students were strongly anti-Israel, and the same study also showed that large numbers of them were ignorant about the most basic facts about the Middle East. 75% of them couldn't even locate the Palestinian territories on a map. 84% of them didn't know when Israel captured the West Bank and why. These students showed a lot of ignorance in some other key areas. You may have heard a famous chant that is proclaimed by those who are pro-Hamas and pro-Palestinian. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. This is a chant that calls for the total destruction of Israel. The Wall Street Journal did a survey and discovered that more than half of the students who support this slogan could not identify which river and which sea the chant was talking about. I believe it's safe to say many of the people who feel so strongly against Israel do so because they are ignorant about the facts. They've accepted false narratives and lies that they have heard in the media and in educational institutions, narratives and lies that have no factual basis, and ignore the truth. I'd like to expand on this by talking about one specific narrative that's getting a good amount of debate these days. In the previous podcast, I explained why Israel is not Palestine. We talked about the fact that many people today call the Holy Land Palestine at a time when it wasn't Palestine at all. And I explained that the land occupied by the Jewish people was not officially known as Palestine until AD 135. That's when the Roman Emperor Hadrian crush the Second Jewish Revolt. Out of hatred for the Jews, Hadrian decided to rename the land Palestine. This happened well after the Bible was written. It happened 100 years after Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. For anyone to take a name that was used from AD 135 onward and impose it backward onto an earlier era doesn't make sense. In addition, there are people today who call the land Palestine, even though its official and recognized name is Israel. To call it Palestine now is to agree with the Palestinian terrorists who say the land is theirs and that the nation of Israel should be wiped out. In the previous podcast, I also shared that Emperor Hadrian called the land Palestine because he wanted to erase the connection between the Jewish people and their land. But there is a popular narrative today that claims, no, Hadrian wasn't the first to call the area Palestine. This narrative has caused a lot of confusion, even among Christians. That's why I want to talk about it in this podcast. There are many who agree that the land was first called Palestine in AD 135, and that this was done by Emperor Hadrian. But there are others who claim no, the land was called Palestine much, much earlier than that. The first place they point is to the writings of Herodotus, a Greek historian who lived in the 5th century BC. They say that according to his writings, the land we popularly know as Israel was called Palestine. His writings date to about 425 BC, and the same people who point to Herodotus also say that there were other Greek and Roman writers who followed in his footsteps and used the term Palestine. And they claim that the term Palestine was a universal term to describe all of that region. In my previous podcast, I explained that biblically, the term Palestine refers to a strip of land along the Mediterranean coast in the south part of Israel. The Bible never uses the term Palestine to refer to all of the Holy Land. But there are people who say no. The entire land was known as Palestine, and they point to a handful of ancient historians or writers, beginning with Herodotus in 425 BC. So are they right or wrong? Was the land officially called Palestine before Emperor Hadrian gave his ruling in AD 135? Let's take a closer look. For context, it's important to look at Herodotus' track record as a historian. There are some who call him the father of history. That's because he was the first to write so extensively about ancient history. He wrote a 9-volume work called The Histories, and he inspired others to follow in his footsteps. But Herodotus had his fair share of critics in ancient times, and he still does today. The reliability of some of his writings has been questioned. One of the biggest examples of this is his descriptions of ancient Babylon. For example, the details he wrote about the height and thickness of the walls around the city and the number of gates and other information has been shown to be seriously inaccurate. And there are other historical details he wrote that are still questioned today. In a book that modern-day scholar Robin Waterfield wrote about Herodotus, he makes this observation. Herodotus himself does not expect us to believe everything we read. He often emphasizes that what he gives us is provisional information, the best he has been able in his researches to discover. He sometimes interrupts the ongoing account in his first-person voice as the narrator, precisely to remind us not to treat the ongoing narrative as definitively true. Now, Herodotus himself made this admission about his work. I owe it to tell what is being told, but I, by no means, owe it to believe it. In other words, there were times when he relied on what other people told him. This is another way of saying he couldn't always verify information firsthand. So what about Herodotus' use of the term Palestine? Was he accurate? There are some who claim that when Herodotus describes Palestine, he was describing all of the land now known as Israel. But there are a few problems with this. Even today, historians aren't entirely sure what Herodotus meant when he used the term Palestine. If you go online, you'll see there's still a lot of debate going on. It's important to note that when Herodotus wrote about the region, at one point, he described Palestine as part of Syria. He stated that Palestine was a district of Syria. And in the handful of times that he used the word Palestine, he never said how far inland this so-called Palestine went. At minimum, all we know for sure is that he was referring to the coastline. In his own words, he said, "The region I am describing skirts our sea." By that, he meant the Mediterranean Sea. Then he went on to say he was talking about the coast of Palestine, Syria. So he refers to the ocean and to the coast. For this historian to refer only to the coast would be consistent with how the Bible uses the term Palestine. The Bible uses Palestine to speak only of the area where the Philistines lived, along the coast, and not the entire land. The evidence seems to indicate that Herodotus visited the coast, but it doesn't appear he ever went inland. Nor did he ever explain how far inland the term Palestine was supposed to extend. So there is no clear evidence that tells us the term Palestine, as used by Herodotus, referred to the entire land that we know today as Israel. And the historians who followed in his footsteps may have done so because of his pervasive influence. They were likely echoing him. They relied on his work, which, as we've already seen, wasn't always reliable. It also doesn't help that Herodotus was well known for his storytelling and exaggeration. There were times when he embellished detail, and this is yet another reason modern scholars are careful about depending too heavily on his writing. So we've looked at a handful of reasons that we shouldn't put a lot of weight on Herodotus as an authority. We cannot rely on him for information about what the land was called from the 5th century BC onward. And there's more. During that time period, there were other historians who did refer to the land using the terms Judea, Samaria, and Galilee, all of which were parts of ancient Israel. They didn't call it Palestine. More importantly, the Bible, which has more ancient manuscript evidence to back it up than any other source, never used the term Palestine to describe all the land. What's especially interesting is the fact the term Palestine never appears in the Septuagint. After Herodotus, ancient Greece's influence on the Holy Land was pervasive. From the time of Alexander the Great's death in 323 BC onward, the Jewish people predominantly spoke Greek. For this reason, it made sense for the Hebrew Old Testament to be translated into Greek. This translation is known as the Septuagint. Work began on the Septuagint during the 3rd century BC, and yet it never refers to the entire land as Palestine. In fact, the term Palestine doesn't appear at all in the Septuagint. This would have been roughly a couple hundred years after Herodotus. If it were true that Palestine had become the standard name for the land, then you would think the term would have appeared in the Septuagint, but it doesn't. And here's a very important question. Instead of relying on historians or writers, wouldn't it make more sense to rely on what the powers who ruled over the land called it? After the northern kingdom of Israel was taken captive by Assyria, and after the southern kingdom of Judea was taken captive by Babylon, what was the land called from the time of those two captivities all the way to AD 135? None of the empires that had control of the land officially called it Palestine. During the Persian Empire and going into the Greek period, the official name was a term that translated to province of Judea. Both Greece and Rome called it Judea. So far, there has been no archaeological evidence from the Greek period, either on coins or on inscriptions, that indicate the region was ever officially called Palestine. And during the early Roman period, the philosopher Philo and the historian Josephus predominantly referred to the land as Judea. One of the more powerful evidences we have is the fact that Hadrian had to officially change the name of the land, as well as change the name of Jerusalem. If the land were already known as Palestine, Hadrian wouldn't have found it necessary to change the name. Also, it's not until after AD 135 that we see Roman coins that designate this land as Syria Palestine. Hadrian did this to show that the land was no longer the province of Judea, but it was now a Roman colony. All of this tells us that the narrative about the Holy Land being called Palestine for hundreds of years before the New Testament is not correct. Palestine was not the most common name used for the land before Hadrian. And more importantly, all the ancient empires that ruled over the land between the time of Herodotus to the time of Hadrian officially called it the province of Judea, or simply Judea. One of the reasons that some people are anxious to use Herodotus as an authority is because they are trying to give the impression that today's Arab Palestinians had ancestors in the land as far back as 500 BC. This is done in an attempt to prove that the land really belongs to the Palestinians, who, in reality, are Arabs. But the problem is that today's Arab Palestinians trace their ethnic affiliation to the Arabs who entered the land in the 7th century AD, more than 500 years after Emperor Hadrian. And the Arabs are not the descendants of the ancient Philistines. As we noticed last week, the Philistines were a sea-going people who hailed from Crete and Greece. As a people group, they largely ceased to exist hundreds of years before the time of Christ. That leaves us with a gap of more than 1,000 years between the end of the Philistines and the first major Arab conquest of the Holy Land during the 7th century AD. When Herodotus used the term Palestine, there was no Arab presence in the land at all. In contrast, the Jewish presence goes back to before the time of Herodotus, and it has been continuous ever since. There's one more important point. When Emperor Hadrian called the land Palestine, he referred only to the geographical region. Back then, there was no such thing as a Palestinian nation or people or language, and there never has been. Instead, the land has primarily been inhabited by a mixture of Jewish people, Arabs, and Christians. The term Palestinian wasn't really claimed for the purpose of describing a specific people group until the 1960s. That's when the Palestinian Liberation Organization began to use the term to spread the narrative that the Palestinians, who are actually Arabs, were a distinct people group whom they claimed was oppressed by Israel. In a paper titled Some Observations on the Name of Palestine, scholar Louise Feldman made this observation. The name Palestine is correctly used only when applied to the land of the ancient Philistines along the coast of the Mediterranean. The official name of the area, whether in Jewish or non-Jewish sources, including official data such as inscriptions and coins, is Judea. Now pay attention to what he wrote next. Were it not for Hadrian's deliberate attempt to eliminate all trace of Jewish sovereignty, the name would have remained Judea, as indeed it did, despite the official change in many literary and even official documents. This is just one example of the many false narratives today that give a wrong impression about Israel. And tragically, it is narratives like these that lead ignorant people to support Hamas or the Palestinians. And it is narratives like these that the Palestinians use to continue what Emperor Hadrian started, to do everything possible to sever the Jewish people from the land God gave to them. This is why it's so important for us as Christians to take the time to know the facts. When we know and support the truth about Israel, we will find ourselves landing on the right side of history, the right side of the Bible, and the right side of God Himself. Thank you for joining me today for Foreshadows Report. Our main focus in this podcast is to grow in our understanding of Bible prophecy. With that in mind, our motto is to keep watch and find hope. Jesus Himself said we are to be alert for His blessed return. God gave us Bible prophecy so that we could have hope in a world that is growing darker than ever. As we look to God's promises about the future, we are better able to endure the difficulties of today. That's why I wrote a 365-day devotional called One Day Nearer. The purpose of this book is to help us keep watch and find hope every day of the year. The first part of the book has nearly 100 devotions about how to live wisely in these last days. And the other 265 or so devotions walk us through all the major prophecies in the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation. These devotions were written to help inform and to encourage. They're meant to help us realize how Bible prophecy can have a life-changing influence on us and help us to increase in wisdom, strength, and hope. To order the book, you can go to my website, stevemillerresources.com. There you'll find links to different retailers who are able to take orders. That's at stevemillerresources.com. Thank you for taking the time to join me for this episode, and I'm grateful to Harvest House Publishers for making this podcast possible.